KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulveda. We begin with bad news for Tony Mendoza. The state senator accused of sexual misconduct is facing expulsion from the chamber he serves. The man introducing the articles of expulsion, Mendoza's former roommate, Senate President Kevin De Leon. Here's KQED's Katie Orr.
There's actually a lot at stake in this situation for Senator Kevin De Leon. There have been people who have questioned whether or not he could have known about Mr. Mendoza's alleged behavior. It was alleged that Mr. Mendoza was inviting women back to their shared house. De Leon maintains he did not know about any of this behavior. And of course, he's running for Senate against Dianne Feinstein. And he wants to be seen as a leader in the Me Too movement against sexual harassment, and having his own roommate accused of sexual harassment is inconvenient.
That's KQED's Katie Orr. We're going to move on now. 2 days after the Parkland High School shooting in Florida, Los Angeles County officials say they have thwarted what they believe could have been another school shooting. Security guard Marino Chavez overheard a 17-year-old student at El Camino High School in Whittier say he was planning to shoot up the school in the next 3 weeks. Authorities would go on to find two AR-15s in the teen's possession. L.A. County Sheriff Jim McConnell says this threat is just one of many that the department has received in the past week.
Just since February the 14th shooting in Florida, our department has dealt with 19 threats of violence targeting schools, school administrators, or students.
The student was arrested for making criminal threats. Mayors of some of California's largest cities are pushing legislation that would give $1.5 billion in state funding to combat homelessness. KQED's Jeremy Siegel reports.
The Big 11 is a coalition of California mayors, including Eric Garcetti of Los Angeles, Daryl Steinberg of Sacramento, and San Francisco's Mark Farrell. They, along with a bipartisan group of state legislators, are asking the state to match local funding for homeless services. Here's Sacramento Mayor Steinberg.
Homelessness is the single biggest quality of life challenge we face in our cities. And cities cannot do it alone.
State Assemblyman Phil Ting from San Francisco and L.A. County Senator Ricardo Lara are pushing the legislation in their respective houses. The one-time block grant would help fund local projects, including shelter diversion and permanent housing programs. For the California Report, I'm Jeremy Siegel.
Next time you're reading a story to a child, take a look at how the book talks about good guys and bad guys. Is there any mention of due process? Andrew Stelter reports that Oakland librarians have created a toolkit for evaluating children's books.
If you're ready for a story, clap your hands. If you're ready,
it's Monday morning story time at the Oakland Public Library's downtown branch. Children's librarian Mahasin Abawi Alim reads to a couple dozen kids.
Once upon a time, there was a little boy who played the ukulele. Around town, he'd go.
Kids' books can be pretty fun. But they're also how children learn about difficult subjects like potty training, fighting with siblings, and for many kids, what the role of a police officer is. Alim uses books to help introduce law enforcement to her own three kids, now aged 3, 8, and 11.
In books, they're mostly depicted as community helpers, and as they've gotten older and been more aware of current events, we've talked more and more about how, just like in every field, there are people who are thoughtful and conscious and want to do the right thing, and there are people on the police force who may not.
Due in part to the Black Lives Matter movement, those are conversations that lots of parents are having these days and have long been a part of child rearing for African American families like Alim's. But children's literature hasn't necessarily kept up with the times.
The problem we have with police books right now is that there really isn't much that represents that fearful side.
Alim's colleague, Amy Martin, designed a toolkit, a publicly available document for librarians to help examine whether a book accurately reflects how the law really works or reflects the full range of children's realities. For example,
there's a relatively new picture book called I'm Afraid Your Teddy Is in Trouble Today.
Martin takes out a copy of the book, which opens with two police officers confronting the reader at their front door, telling them their teddy bear had a wild party and trashed the house and now is in big trouble.
For a child who's come home to find a parent being arrested, that could be a really, really frightening image.
And may not be the best thing to read to that kid. Martin got supportive feedback from an Oakland police lieutenant and other groups before publishing the guide, which is being used throughout Oakland's library system. Ellie Grimmer, who came to Storytime today, says she's grateful for guidance about how to talk with her two kids.
There have been times where we've read stories, and afterwards, like when the kids are away, my husband are like, well, that's kind of true, you know, about police, but it's sometimes it's not. It depends on what you look like and where you're from, and it's complicated.
Authors and publishers have gradually been including black and brown skin characters in children's books. Portrayals of law enforcement could be a next step to make sure that every child can see their own world reflected in a story. For the California Report, I'm Andrew Stelzer in Oakland.
The sharing economy is dead. Long live the sharing economy. Here's KQED's Sam Harnett.
Airbnb started as an alternative to hotels. It was dubbed part of the so-called sharing economy, a label that has been debunked because you don't share a Lyft or Airbnb, you pay for it. Tom Slee writes books about on-demand companies like Airbnb. He says it's no surprise the company is now working with hotels.
Almost every other sharing economy company has done this.
Not worked with hotels, but partnered or sold into an industry it aimed to disrupt. Zipcar, for instance, is now owned by Avis. The handyman service Porch was acquired by Lowe's. The list goes on. Slee says these internet companies built feel-good brands around peer-to-peer business. But once they get venture capital, they've got to grow to satisfy investors.
They start off saying, oh, this is a path for the little guy, and it ends up being a partnership with some very big institutions, and that's what's happening again.
And it's already happening with Airbnb. Hotel rooms have been available on the platform for years. To capitalize on this trend, the company is announcing today that it'll make it easier for hotels to post rooms on the site. For the California Report, I'm Sam Harnett.
In Orange County, where U.S. District Judge David Carter allowed evictions of a large homeless encampment along the Santa Ana Riverbed beginning this week. He did it on the condition that advocates in the county work to find permanent supportive housing solutions instead of just moving people along. And in the meantime, people are being given vouchers that allow them to stay in motels for 30 days. KPCC's Josie Wong gives us this report from Orange County.
So I'm outside a motel in Buena Park where the motel owner has agreed to rent out 40 of his 53 rooms to the county for homeless people. His motel is one of the places that takes pets, which is, of course, critical for some of the homeless people who are living along the riverbed because they don't want to be parted with animals that are essentially family. And I checked out one of the rooms with a gentleman I had met at the riverbed. I followed him to this motel. His name is Fritz Reichenbach. And it's a standard motel room. It looked very neat and with double beds. And Fritz seemed quite happy with the place because it's been so long for him since he's stayed in a actual room. He has been homeless pretty much since 2012 when he lost his home in the foreclosure crisis. But at the same time, he also said he felt a little trapped by the four walls because he's so used to sleeping in his tent under the stars. So, yeah, it's been 6 years for him. So this is the first time that he says in a long time that he's been able to have a place with hot and cold running water, you know, a bathtub and a TV.
That's KPCC's Josie Wong. We're going to move on now. Because of the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida, students all across the country are preparing for walkouts and marches next month. Student organizers all around California are signing up to protest gun violence and call for gun control. KQED's education reporter Vanessa Rancagno talked with a couple of juniors at a school near Oakland.
When friends Lily Connable and Sarah Scaff, both 16, heard about the national walkout plans, they jumped in.
We're the ones that need to start speaking up about this because we're the ones that are most directly impacted by school shootings.
That's Sarah. In the last few days, she and Lily say they've heard from lots of classmates, all looking for ways to let people know how much this issue affects them. Here's Lily talking about what she's heard.
They were sad and they were angry and they just didn't know where to turn. No one had given them resources. And I think that just goes to show how we do want to take action. We really want to have an impact, but we don't always know where to start.
On March 14th, they plan to walk out in solidarity with students around the country. But before that, Sarah and Lily are organizing lunchtime seminars to help students learn more about gun control. And they say that's just the beginning. For the California Report, I'm Vanessa Rancagno in Alameda.
Let's stay on the topic of mass shootings. We're seeing teens confront politicians over gun control across the country. But here's a question. Should they be confronting their peers about domestic abuse? Well, perhaps I should explain. We here at the California Report have reviewed manifestos, shooter statements, and reported histories of all the mass shooters since Columbine almost 20 years ago. And one thing we see over and over again is that the shooters commit abuse against women, or they stalk them, as in the case of the Parkland shooting. Kathy Moore is the head of the California Partnership to End Domestic Violence. She says the sad irony of Parkland is that it took place during February, which is Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. She says everyone, including teens, should confront abusers when they see them.
Oh, absolutely. I think most folks who've worked in the domestic violence field for any length of time react probably as I do. Every time I hear about a mass shooting of some sort, I just wait and I listen and I look for the questions. And sure enough, you peel back the layers and there's almost always some kind of domestic violence at play. We all are able to intervene by reaching out to somebody who might be being hurt, but also to intervene with people who seem like they're not treating their loved ones very well.
You know, I don't envy that teenager who asked to speak up, because as an adult recently, I was at a friend's house and her partner, he was pointing at her, belittling her. He pushed her face down. It was a very uncomfortable situation, and I found myself not knowing what to do. Not that I did not want to stand up. It was more of remembering that when my mom went through her own domestic violence situation, at some point the person who is the objector has to leave. And when that person leaves, then it's, again, just the abuser and the person being abused. And it tends to always be uglier after someone said something.
I certainly struggle with this, a sense of, am I going to make something worse? Is that kind of what you're speaking to, that once I intervene, that, you know, there may be the person who's being abusive might be even more angry or more frustrated.
And actually punish the person in a harsh way, because they seem to take out all their problems on the person to begin with.
Right. I mean, that's a valid concern, no doubt about it. At the same time, what we know is that doing nothing and saying nothing just reinforces a culture of this being okay. So you're right. We do have to be sensitive and to pick and choose those opportunities. And there is no one kind of formula. Whether intervening in that kind of a public sort of situation may not be in the best interest, but I think there are ways that we can talk to both parties privately so that they're not put on the spot and, you know, in a social situation like that. I think the important thing, though, is that we're speaking up and we're telling people we care and that this isn't what we tolerate in our culture, in our families, in our friendships.
Kathy Moore is the executive director of the California Partnership to End Domestic Violence. She joined us from Sacramento. Kathy, thanks so much.
Thank you, John. I appreciate your time and attention to this important issue.
Support for the California Report comes from CCRM San Francisco. CCRM physicians, using today's technology, help fulfill the dream of having a child. Learn more about family building options at ccrmivf.com/San Francisco. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
Democratic Assemblywoman Christina Garcia and her allies are pushing back against allegations that she sexually harassed legislative staffers. You can read what she is saying about those claims by going to our website, calreport.org. As for now, this has been the California Report for Thursday, February 22nd, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great day.